It's the Totally Football Show, listeners. Today, bringing you Premier League. Huddersfield on fire, Chelsea crash and Burnley. Usual problems with Arsenal at the Emirates, while another match sees Liverpool's day go up in smoke. We look forward to Liverpool's chances Tuesday against Hoffenheim, Bundesliga's set-piece wizards. Luckily, Klopp's side don't have any problems handling that kind of thing. And we get the weekend's European news too. There's Real Barcelona in the Spanish Super Cup, more trouble for Juventus in the Italian one, and we find out how Neymar got on in his debut in France. We've got Championship, Football League roundup, all sorts of other things too in this Totally Football Show. That's right, Totally Football Show. Thanks for joining us here on the very new and exciting Totally Football Show. Very interesting lineup we've got for you today. Raphael Honigstein.
Hello, James.
It's lovely to see you, Rafa.
It's lovely to see you too.
Great. Ian McIntosh.
Good morning.
All right. Good to see you as well. And, you know, it's awful when you come back after a successful season and you have new faces in, you have to Google who they are. Luckily, that's not the case with Leroy Rossignol.
Hi, James.
Hi, Leroy. How are you?
I'm very, very good, James.
Well, it's so good to have you in, because we sat pre-pod, and you've been full of information, behind-the-scenes information.
Yeah, I do like to give.
Do you?
I like to give.
Excellent. All right. It was. What did you make? Because you literally saw every single game this weekend. Is that right?
I watch every single Premier League game every weekend. I work on the Premier League channel and do shows in and around it, Top and Tell, or all the live television. So I watch every single game, and it was. I'm exhausted from Friday night Arsenal's game right through to the last game yesterday, Man United game. You know, Man United scoring four. This is the first time they scored four goals under me. I'm absolutely exhausted. It was exhilarating, but I just thought it was the same. You know, Liverpool.
Did you think?
Yeah, Liverpool conceding goals and set pieces. Yeah, Arsenal could have gone either way, looking floppy at the back and brilliant going forward. It was more of the same, really.
There were one or two differences, and Man United, as you mentioned, are one of them. We'll come on to that. Mm-hmm. Another difference I thought was Sky's graphics. I don't know how you felt about those. You had issues with their head to head.
Yeah, they've morphed. You know, when they have two managers for the game, they've morphed the two managers' heads together. So you kind of get three quarters of each man's head. And I was trying to work out.
Do you get
who?
Three eyes? Is it like it's a three-eyed manager?
It's like a Medusa. There's heads coming out everywhere, and they're kind of. It's obviously, and they're both looking away from each other, so the backs of their heads are kind of intertwined. It is horrible.
Okay. It's the other thing, you haven't seen this yet, Raph, have you? So you know how they used to do the player animations where the footballers would saunter out and adopt a jaunty pose and wave at you or whatever? Yeah. They ditched all of that and they've gone very old school. Now they have a freeze and it basically looks like they've taken the players' Tinder profiles. They were all kind of like leering at the camera and then they put four of them together for, say, the back line and you effectively got a boy band. It's quite disconcerting. Yeah. Perhaps we'll get used to it. I mean, Sky are full of innovations, but
James, it's supposed to show their personality, but just makes them look idiotic.
Do you think?
Absolutely.
Well, maybe that's their personality.
Maybe that's right.
Perhaps so. All right. Anyway, so what was different then about this opening weekend? You're suggesting Man United. What do you think, Rafa?
Different, as in unexpected, or?
Well, let me put it this way: given that they're the only one of the leading six sides that can actually defend, apparently. Jury's still out on Man City. Are they now installed immediately as title favourites?
I think they were not far off Man City anyway, as far as the favourites were concerned. And West Ham put up so pathetic a resistance that I think it's hard to judge how good Man United are, both ends of the pitch. Yet I actually tipped West Ham to go down.
Oh,
because I think they're terrible. Shambolic. And I think they showed it yesterday. So let's wait a little bit. I think still there is something very functional and frighteningly efficient about this Man United. And I think we all kind of think of the machine-like performances that Mourinho teams have put in to win titles. But they're still a little bit low on imagination. There's no real wit in the team. I think they scored a goal when West Ham actually attacked for the first time in the half and scored on the counter-attack. They had problems creating that many clear-cut chances if Mata wasn't running through on goal. So let's wait a little bit, James.
All right, but we can at least salute Lukaku's terrific debut performance in the Premier League for Man United.
Absolutely, Lukaku was fantastic. Matic, though, seems to be the cornerstone of everything now, because he could just break up every, well, There wasn't too much that West Ham
you
did.
Broke up. What? 100% of all attacks you broke up.
What little West Ham brought to the party, he stamped on very efficiently and then moved the ball up the pitch and gave it to someone quicker. And that, as everyone in the Man United team gets used to that, as they get used to the fact that they don't have to have quite so many defensive responsibilities as before, they're going to free up, they're going to express themselves. I mean, the first half, Manchester United were still fairly slow, still kind of keeping the ball amongst themselves, but gradually you could see the confidence starting to come through them. They'll get better and better. Like Rafa, there's 37 games left and West Ham were terrible, but that was a very encouraging start.
Well, Rafa predicted them to go down. Leroy, were you looking at the big name signings they made, thinking this could be something quite interesting from the Hammers?
It was always going to be interesting, but it was no real surprise. I know I said Man United got four, but I'm not getting carried away, because Lukaku's got more goals and he's played games against West Ham. Yeah. He always scores against West Ham.
13 and 11, yeah.
And Rafa's absolutely right. They were pathetic. We got to wait until Man United played the other big teams, because then Mourinho goes, let's go for the point. Because that's why they got 15 draws last season, because they weren't able to change their attitude midway through a game. Mourinho, it's just part of his makeup that when he plays against the big sides, he doesn't want to lose. That's in the Premier League, it's obviously better to win one and lose one than to draw two. But from Mourinho's perspective, it always seems better that he'd rather draw two against the big side. So I'm just holding fire on Man United. Right. I still think Man City are the favourites.
Do you want to hold fire on West Ham, or can we already declare them in trouble?
I'll tell you why they're in trouble, because last year they bought a load of foreign players. We said, OK, it's the recruitment. The players aren't good enough. Joe Hart, Zabaleta,
Chicharito,
Arnautovic, Ayew's fully fit. On paper, they looked exactly the same. And that suggests it's about the coach. Now, Bilic is under pressure straight away, because they've gone out and signed players who've got Premier League experience, because they've got a good team on paper. Mm. But the way they went and performed there, which was so negative, they gave the ball away. And no disrespect to Mark Noble, they buy all these players, and I know, love Mark Noble. Yeah, he's West Ham through and through. But how is he still in the team? When you go and buy players of quality and you're spending big money, again, I know he's a homegrown player and I love Mark Noble, he shouldn't still be in the side when you're spending money on quality players.
I like Bilic and find him a very engaging character, and someone like that who talks that openly and that intelligently about football is always great to have around. But I'm struggling to see what West Ham were doing. I couldn't see what the plan was. And we'll talk about them later, but you could watch Crystal Palace getting thumped at home by Huddersfield, but at least you could see what they were doing and what the greater aim was. West Ham were just incoherent.
Mm. All right. Shall I move on to one of the real shocks of the weekend?
Yeah, move on.
I will then. Yeah. Chelsea-Burnley, how big an upset was this? Well, first of all, Chelsea, maybe not so much these days, but traditionally a strong side at home. Burnley, anything but on the road. Burnley hadn't beaten Chelsea since 1971. Great stat here from Ollie Saylor, by night known as Duncan Alexander. 6% of all the goals that Burnley have ever scored in the Premier League away from home came in the first 45 minutes at Stamford Bridge.
That's a nice stat. That is a nice stat. Well, I think there's a few things to say here. First of all, let's talk about Burnley. I think they are hugely underrated as a team. Nobody really likes them. Nobody really cares about them. Sean Dyche comes across as a little bit strange. But I think he has done fantastic work with his side. And I think they've been overlooked just how much they got out of a very ordinary squad last year. So having seen them live a few times, they always look exactly like they know what they're doing. And while it is still a surprise, and of course they were helped by Cahill's early dismissal and the way the game went, I don't think any team takes Burnley at home and think, yeah, this is going to be an easy three-pointer. Now, to go to Chelsea, I think there is a real problem there with the negativity surrounding Conte and all these stories that came out. This weird contract extension, which wasn't an extension, but actually just a pay rise. One of the weirdest things I've ever seen in professional football.
What, giving him a new deal but not extending it?
Yeah.
It's that rare, is it?
Well, I can't think of a single precedent for that.
Okay.
I mean, it happens to you all the time, Chris, but, but not, not to footballers. No, I mean, it's an extraordinary piece of news, really, that was swamped amongst the transfer speculation and that kind of stuff in the off-season. But it really suggests that loads of stuff is going on there. Mm. And I think that Conte, you know, he's a hard guy. He's a hard bastard. It's great when the results are there and when you get that momentum of winning. But as soon as there's a bit of unrest and stuff, and this distance that he has to the players then becomes quite big all of a sudden. Mm. And I think Chelsea are in real trouble, and I don't think they'll make the top four this year.
Well, here's a question from MH27. He says, why does Chelsea's technical director get off scot-free while Conte probably will get thrown under the bus with no support? We mentioned how great Matic was for Man United. What on earth are you doing up at Old Trafford?
I have no idea. Absolutely no idea. We spent a lot of last week's show with me. It's not the calibre of first 11 that Chelsea have got. It's the complete lack of anything behind it. They've let so many decent players go out on loan that they've got nothing left in the cupboard. Yeah, Emanalo has his own responsibility, but it's always been that way at Chelsea. It's always been, instead of one club pulling together, it's kind of feuding Sicilian states all against each other. If it wasn't Emanalo before that, it was Avram Grant for a bit. It was the Danish guy, Frank Arnesen. Yeah, they've always got these weird kind of blocks of power where everyone's against each
it's
other.
It's worked and it seems well to be, for them.
Yeah. Well, sort of. sort of.
I mean, win the title one year and not
exactly.
The next. It's all right.
Still pretty good. But
you still think like, that they basically started with infinite money about 12 years ago. The short term stuff that, is bad, but the long term
that is the real
stuff,
story,
hasn't
it? Exactly. That the money's no longer there. Mm. And I think they're having to manage things, and that's what Conte's really saying in so many words, that the money is no longer there. Mm. They have to budget, they have to sell players to buy players, and they're profitable these days.
Yeah. I think the thing with Emanalo that might help him is that he's best friends with Abramovich. Whether he's a good negotiator is I don't know. But the thing about Matic is, when you look at it, they've got Bakayoko, who's a fantastic player. So you can't have Bakayoko, Matic, Fabregas and Kante in the squad, because even with Champions League football, they're too good to be left out. So my problem with Chelsea is that they left someone like Nathaniel Shalabar go to Watford. He's rated at the club, been on six loans, 22 years old, starting to come to a point where he would be happy sitting on the bench learning off Bakayoko, Kante and Fabregas, and they let him go as well. So my problem isn't with Matic, my problem is he's gone to Man United, which is absolutely ridiculous because he's just strengthening your rival. But the thing with Chelsea is, and what it showed to me, David Luiz was fantastic last season, but as soon as he's not got Aspilicueta next to him or Cahill next to him,
right,
he melts.
Okay, and Cahill went early. What was it, 14 minutes in? Slightly harsh, perhaps,
yeah,
the red card.
So.
But Burnley, although they had that advantage and then later on Fabregas off as well, they took their chances brilliantly well. Stephen Ward in particular.
Where did
Sean
that come
Dyche
from?
Saying, Ward is up there, scored a great goal, don't know what he's doing there. I'm screaming, get back.
Don't blame him.
I mean, the XPG was below one, I think.
I'm not entirely sure what you mean by that.
When you say they took their chances well, basically they scored three goals from chances that shouldn't have produced one goal statistically.
Right.
So they either got incredibly lucky, or you could say they, you know, they were won the goals in a way.
Well, the pre-season, with all the kind of grumblings from Conte and less transfer activity than you might have expected, and then this result, have a lot of people leaping to predict another hilariously dysfunctional season at the Bridge. I like Adam Hurry saying, footage of this Chelsea-Burnley game destined to be edited into ominous monochrome with echoey audio of Sky Sports News presented over the top, newspaper cuttings and grim-faced players driving off a bit too quickly than is really safe. But if you look at the second half, Morata, the way when he came on that he clicked into that side, the way that the team fought back and very nearly pulled level at the death, are there actually a lot of positives for Chelsea?
I wouldn't say a lot because they've just been done at home by Burnley. But yeah, definitely there's clearly still some spirit there. You certainly don't expect a team down to nine men to go and score a goal against a team that can defend like Burnley.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's clutching at straws, really. They just got done by Burnley.
Next time up for them, they're going to be at Wembley against Spurs without Fabregas, Hazard, Bakayoko or Cahill. Be an interesting game.
I mean, Hazard is a real problem, I think, as well, because he had that great season last year where you felt actually he's now producing a consistency that his potential warrants or, you know, demands, really. And I think he's an absolutely enormous miss for them. And now they're playing with effectively new front line. It's not easy, I think, especially in a system where Conte relies on the front guys kind of doing their own thing. You've got a very defensive setup, and then there's the front guys like a little bit by themselves, and they play on the counter a lot. And a lot of the movements that Hazard and Diego Costa showed last year, you could see that they were either choreographed or because they already had that fantastic understanding that one guy went this way, the other guy went that way, and they produced goals out of situations that were very difficult to score from. And They won't have that this year.
All right. Oh, just worth probably saying that around this time last year, or a little bit later even, Chelsea were getting done 3-0 by Arsenal. Everyone was saying they're going to have huge problems. And Conte responded, and he's always been very astute in the way he's responded to problems. We'll see what he comes up with. Although, Barney Roney, for example, in The Guardian, pointing out that it's worrying the fact that he's now sporting a tracksuit. Oh, you know, down from the snappy suit and tie last season, it's almost like he's saying, no, I'm just a worker here. This is not my responsibility.
Yeah, there's always a message, isn't there? Although he said that it's not a message. I'm not sending messages, he said in the press conference.
Yeah, I thought it was quite ironic he was in a tracksuit because he did less running up and down the pitch. Well, maybe that's because they were losing. Oh, yeah, funny that.
Anyway, so we'll have a little pause and then talk about other things. If you're a fan of close shaves, and which football fan isn't, Cornerstone offer German-engineered blades, lotions and moisturisers to enhance your shaving experience. And the exciting news is if you go to cornerstone.co.uk/totally, then you can get £10 off your Cornerstone order. And you never have to go to the shop again. They'll deliver it right to your door. Mmm. Right, the Totally Football Show. By the way, if you want to get in touch with us, if you're, say, an advertiser with large pots of money, Ian, how do you do that?
Well, you can visit our brand new shiny website, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Right.
Or just get in touch with us on Twitter, where we are there as at the Totally Show.
Is it at Totally Show or the Totally Show?
At the Totally Show.
At the Totally Show, right.
We are the definite article.
Quite a start to this Premier League season. All kicked off with a display of steely resolve, tactical discipline and defensive professionalism, really, at the Emirates as Arsenal took on Leicester. I mean, it's the same as last year, yeah?
It is the same as last year.
Why, Leroy, why?
Arsenal saying they've not got no defenders, but they've got Chambers and he's right, they didn't have any defenders. And they ended up with two left-backs at centre-half, a right-back at left-back and a midfield player at right-back. You know, Arsenal overthinking it. But it's not about players with Arsenal. I keep talking to Arsenal fans. They say, no, we need a central midfield player, we need a centre-half, we need a striker. It doesn't matter who you sign, you'll get the same outcome every single time because Arsene Wenger is in charge. So nothing will change. Yeah, they won this game. He's a genius. The two subs, he came off the bench, he just happened to be fairly decent players in Ramsey and Giroud, scored goals. Well, you know, that's no surprise, but you'll get the same outcome. You'll lose some, you'll win some, you'll be entertaining, you'll be pathetic, you'll end up close to the top four. It'll be the same.
It was brilliant to watch, though, wasn't it?
It always is with Arsenal. It's always entertaining, but it's becoming a bit of a soap opera. Yeah, and nothing changed. I mean, Lacazette is a terrific player. There's no doubt he's a terrific player. He's quick, he's mobile. But they defended deep, Leicester against him. He got his goal early on and then he found it difficult. Leicester should have won that game, in all honesty. I thought Vardy was terrific. I thought he looked really sharp, looked really bright. They got lucky, Arsenal. The goal just before half-time just turned the game in their favour. Got a bit of a ricochet. And they took full advantage.
They were 3-2 down with 8 minutes to go.
I was sitting about five people and we all thought Arsenal would win 4-3.
Right.
Because that's what Arsenal do. Oh, it's five Tottenham fans as well, by the way. That's what they're like. it was no surprise. But next week, they'll lose 4-2. You know, this is Arsenal.
Well, make a note of that. Who are they playing?
Stoke away.
Is it Stoke away?
Yeah, but Stoke are no longer Stoke. I think there is... I would agree with you, Leroy, and I've been saying the same thing for the last 10 years, but I think there is some hope for Arsenal that things might be changing. I think the fact that they are playing through the back, not with these three centre-backs, because that obviously was a disaster, because every time they played the ball out, they looked completely nervous and right for the taking, and Lister did a job on them. But I think in theory, just having five men behind the ball when they're not in possession does stabilise their system a little bit. And we saw the results last year, which were very good. And also, I think there is a chance that Wenger is slowly changing. I know that in the run-up of the FA Cup, they did a lot of work, more work perhaps than they've done in a long, long time, on analysing the opponents, on specifically trying to practice certain situations, the type of balls that Chelsea play over the top. They worked very hard, and a couple of players were very complimentary on the way they were being briefed, they were being prepared. Obviously, they had a week for that. You don't necessarily get the time during the season with Arsenal being involved in Europa League. But I think there is maybe, even though this won't be sort of public discourse, maybe a realisation at Wenger that he hasn't done enough as far as match preparation is concerned. And I think they are beginning to address this.
Right. Interesting to see Alexis Sanchez tweeting from Paris on Sunday night. A lot of people reading things into that. Parisian.
It's lovely for a weekend break.
Yeah.
Could have just been taking Mrs. Sanchez away.
Well, we'll see. There might be developments there.
Perhaps
so.
Can we have a word, though, on Craig Shakespeare,
yep.
the Leicester manager, who I think learnt a horrible lesson because 2 minutes before Arsenal's fight back, he pulled off midfielder Matty James for striker Kelechi Iheanacho, which, even without the benefit of hindsight, I can't have been the only one who went, "Muh?" Especially as he had Andy King on the bench. You know, club stalwart, sensible midfielder, shut it down. Within 3 minutes, the game's gone.
There you go. Fine line between clever and stupid. Speaking of which, Liverpool at Watford. Rafa, if Jurgen Klopp was going to sort Liverpool out, would he not have done it by now?
It's the first game of the season.
Yeah, but he's been there for like... They weren't sorted out last season. They don't look like they're sorted out the
back
this time around.
Where did you expect them to finish last season?
Well, it's not where they finish. It's the way they play. It's the way they defend. Isn't that something that would concern you?
They didn't concede a goal in the last 4 games.
They didn't concede any goals in the last 4 games of the season? That's an interesting stat.
And they didn't concede against West Brom and scored from a set piece. Look, I know from talking to somebody in his coaching staff that they're very aware of their problems with set pieces. They spend a lot of time trying to get it right. Now, there are two suggestions here. A, that simply maybe the quality of players is not good enough, or the coaching is not good enough, or maybe it's a combination of the two. I happen to think that the idea that you can separate sort of the tactics from the players who are then on the pitch is in itself a fallacy, because you can have the best zonal marking system in the world, but if your guy doesn't attack that ball and doesn't really go for it and doesn't commit himself, it's not going to work. It's going to work 100 times in practice, but it's not going to work if that guy switches off like Firmino did and just lets whoever headed in the ball for a free header. So there are clearly issues there. The results against the better teams show you that, in theory, Liverpool can get it right against better sides. And I think they got a little bit unlucky conceding a very controversial goal. And if it's a 3-2, we're having a slightly different conversation. They are aware of the problem.
Right.
They're aware of the problem. And I would personally think that somebody actually a little bit taller, or maybe one or two taller players in the team, would help their cause.
You can't do anything about players not wanting to head the ball. So what you do, you don't put players who don't want to head the ball in places where they need to head the ball. And so it is down to the coach. You look at their team, you look at their back four. Moreno, who we all know has been erratic, is back in the side. Mignolet, who was left out, really, for Karius. Karius was a new man, and Karius came in, had a nightmare. Mignolet's back in, still doing exactly the same thing. So the back four has gone backwards from day one. It's his 100th game. And from this first game to his 100th game, nothing has changed. Nothing has got better. And he has to be judged on progression, because that's what Klopp was all about. So from my perspective, there hasn't been progression there. In fact, I'll go back to Brendan Rodgers 2011-2012, and they had exactly the same problems then at Liverpool. We've been talking about it for 6 or 7 years. Hasn't been addressed.
Yeah, I don't think it's entirely fair. I mean, Liverpool very nearly won the league with having conceded 50 goals. And this Liverpool team is a much better defensive team. And if you play zonally, you'll have to have guys who want to have the ball, because you'll only have two centre-backs and they can't all cover the whole zone.
But those are the key areas. The key areas are the middle of the goal and their posts.
I agree with you, but there's only two natural headers in that team, and I think that's a big issue. And that's an issue that hasn't really been addressed. I think Mourinho shows you sort of the complete opposite. I think he picks players thinking in the Premier League, you can never really fully control a game. You need to have these guys in there and even a couple of guys as a backup. If we can't play a game, we'll throw them forward and just pump balls in. Klopp or Liverpool, and you don't really know kind of sort of where the line is here, haven't got these players in yet. And I think that's a big issue.
Well, they're hoping that maybe Van Dijk's going to join them. Mm. We'll see about that. Meantime, they got the rather more immediate worry of a trip to Hoffenheim this Tuesday. Rafa, this is the tougher side they could have drawn in the Champions League playoff. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think
why?
So. Why? Because they finished fourth in Germany with a team that doesn't have many great individual performers and lost two of their best ones in Süle and Rudi. So that, at least that is good news. But it really is testament to an amazing coach and Julian Nagelsmann, the wonder kid, 29 years old. I think he still is. Maybe he's just turned 30. And he got so much out of this team through very, very innovative coaching. And they're impossible to predict because, you know, with these highly coached teams, you usually say, okay, they're this or they're that. This team change all the time. They change during games. The lineup's almost impossible to predict, apart from, you know, one or two guys always there. Very, very hard to play against. And they just do so many little things right. I don't think necessarily that it's a bad matchup for Liverpool, because I think the kind of problems that Liverpool have in the Premier League against, shall we say, the smaller sides or the more simplistic sides at times, Hoffenheim are not that.
All right.
Hoffenheim are more intricate. Hoffenheim will, you know, will think about things. I think Liverpool struggle more with the physicality, with the muscularity of the Premier League. So I still think, even on the basis of Saturday's result and performance, that Liverpool are favourites to squeeze through, simply because they have better players and they're just a better side. But it is a really, really bad draw.
Okay, because one thing that a lot of people have mentioned is, well, Liverpool conceded, I think, from two corners at Watford.
Yeah.
And we know they have issue with set pieces. Hoffenheim, the best set piece scorers in the Bundesliga. I think they scored 25% of all their goals last season were from set pieces. I mean, that is a danger. No, that's Liverpool's weakness, and that appears to be a real strength of Hoffenheim.
Yeah, I mean, they have one or two players who are very good in the air. They have Sandro Wagner up front, is like a classic number nine type, and he will cause problems. But they will try to exploit Liverpool's weak points, obviously, and they would have done a lot of work on how to attack and what to do, and they'll probably seize the ball to Liverpool, even though they're playing at home, trying to play on the counter-attack, because Liverpool have an issue with preventing the counter-attacks, and they have an issue with dead ball situations. But I still find it hard not to think that Liverpool will over two legs, especially with a second leg at Anfield, will not find a way to squeeze through. But it is a bad draw, and you know, I think Jurgen Klopp's put a very brave face on things, saying super exciting, yeah, Hoffenheim. But I think actually, it's really not the draw he wanted, because for him personally, it'd be a huge embarrassment as a Liverpool coach in Germany, getting knocked out by Hoffenheim. I mean, Hoffenheim are very hard to find an equivalent, but they're really a kind of nothing team that have got a bit of money because of their benefactor, but have absolutely no history, only been in existence for about 10 years. And for them to knock out Liverpool in the Champions League, I think would be very hurtful for them.
Right. Interesting.
Great game.
Yeah. So that's Tuesday night, and it just underlines how many great young German managers there are around. Julian Nagelsmann there with Hoffenheim. Can we add David Wagner to that category?
Yeah, we'll claim him, I think. Yeah.
Who's got a brilliant start to the season with Huddersfield, briefly top of the league, which is on that all-important first day of the season.
Yeah.
What a performance that. 3-0 away at Crystal Palace.
Yeah, you heard it here first as well.
Yeah, you tipped this last week, didn't
and
you?
And Kelly as well. Yeah, Kelly was very confident. It was like a kind of perfect storm, because you could see that Palace under Frank de Boer were trying this new kind of more expressive system. They were taking a little bit more time on the ball than they had done before. And every time they crossed the halfway line, Huddersfield just hit them. It was on them like wasps at a picnic. And there was nothing they could do. Suddenly there's space behind them and Huddersfield are pouring through. They could have scored more. I mean, it was more nuanced than that. In the second half, Palace actually made a lot of chances. And I think better teams will take advantage of the way that Huddersfield are so keen on the press, so desperate to get in your face. They're going to leave a lot of gaps and they will be picked off by other teams. But it was, it was just a fantastic performance by them. And they held on to the lead as well.
And a couple of goals from Steve Meunier, who's inspired, he says, by Didier Drogba. And he's almost inviting the comparison. How do you rate him?
Look, I hadn't seen a lot of him, but David Wagner was really delighted to get him. He said he was surprised that he got him. You know, he scored 14 goals last season, I think, in the French League. There's not many good strikers about, certainly of that stature. And he looked very confident yesterday against a Palace. You know, Scott Dan's not bad. You know, he's not a bad central defender. Mm. And he made Scott look a little bit silly at times. But the other person impressed me was Adam Moy. You know, the 10-million signing for Man City. He set up a couple of goals. I think that he thought he was going to be so important. He was the first one through the door. As soon as they got promoted last year, put the bid in, got him £10 million. It seems like an absolute nothing now, doesn't it? But he got him through the door. and he dictates the play for Huddersfield. And you're right, Ian. You know, they want their possession based. You know, they want to roll the ball out. They want to play out the back. They want to make the pitch nice and big. And they caught Palace just at the right time where they're in, what's the word, transition. You know, trying to change from being a Sam Allardyce team to being going back to being an Alan Pardew team, which is why he got sacked for, which doesn't really make a lot of sense to me with this appointment.
What's your information, Leroy, about the mood at Selhurst Park? Because, I mean, De Boer came in spectacular fashion at Inter. I think he lasted about 80 days there.
Yeah.
Picked up very late in the pre-season. It's a slightly similar position at Crystal Palace, where it's not really his squad, is it?
It's not really a squad. And when you're working with a coach like Frank de Boer, I'll give you a comparison. That in Holland, the two wide players, and usually the most intelligent players, when to go wide, when to come in, when to join in with the front man. And then you're working with, no disrespect, with Wilfried Zaha and Andros Townsend, who are just guys who get the ball and run and cross the ball. Mm. And that's no disrespect to them. That's what they are. So he's working with tools which I don't think can do the job. And I think that's difficult. And also, he's in transition in terms of changing the squad around. There's four or five more senior players who aren't in the 22.
Right.
Who aren't very happy.
It's a little bit like AVB at Chelsea.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I have to say, not since Ricky Bobby in Talladega Nights has anyone wielded the phrase, with all due respect, quite as much venom as you said.
With all due respect to tools, I think you said.
Yeah.
I actually tipped again. Crystal Palace to go down.
So you've got West Ham, Palace,
yeah,
and Rafa, at this point, who's the other team?
Huddersfield. Unfortunately, I think that the intensity they're relying on to make the system work is very hard thing to keep up, as it were, James, for the whole season.
Mm.
And I fear a little bit for them. I mean, I have to be 100% honest here. I haven't really seen that many games of them last year. The playoff final I saw didn't really inspire that much confidence in their abilities, but I accept the point that they've strengthened really well and might give themselves a chance.
There was a very big difference between Huddersfield sort of through the autumn of last season and in the last sort of 6 weeks of last season, where they were very clearly running on vapours. But it's, you know, eight games fewer if they don't take the cup competitions too seriously. Still inclined to go with my first guess that, because it really is a guess, that they'll do very well up until about November, and then people will start to figure them out. It'd be interesting. I'm actually up there on Sunday to see Newcastle, and Benitez is the kind of manager who'll be watching that tape over and over again, noticing where the gaps are appearing as the press kicks in. So it'd be interesting to see how they do there.
All right, Benitez has got one or two issues of his own.
Just a few, yeah.
A squad that's not quite as ample as he would certainly like.
Good thing is you'll never make it a political thing.
And has been weakened further by, well, injury, a couple of injuries actually, in the game against Spurs, and also their captain getting sent off for putting his foot in the wrong place.
Yeah, quite the stupidest dismissal this weekend, and probably for a number of weekends to come. It wasn't a particularly violent, it wasn't a nice thing to do. He just walked over and trod on Dele Alli's ankle, but he did it right in front of the referee while the referee was staring at him with his whistle in his mouth. He could not have been caught any more red-handed.
Perhaps he had somewhere to be, I'm not sure. I was excited, and I know this has been mentioned before, but it is terrific the fact that Spurs have replaced Kyle Walker with Kyle Walker-Peters. It's a bit like when there were two Gary Stevens.
Yes.
Or, I suppose, when there were two Moussa Dembélés, which there are.
Exactly.
Yeah. I thought that was a joke. That's actually true.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. He looks like Danny Thomas. You remember Danny Thomas used to play for Spurs? And at 17, I was speaking to Tim Sherwood yesterday. At 17, Tim didn't fancy him. He said he's too small, he's not going to make it. And he was delighted that he had made it because he's diminutive, he's 5'5", he looks like a proper fullback. And I thought it was a joke. So, I mean, the main thing why they sold Kyle Walker is because they could save money on the shirt, which is, you know, which is always handy.
But think how much it's going to cost if you want to put a name on it now.
I know, exactly.
Yeah. Also this weekend, goalless between Saints and Swansea. No Sigurdsson in that match. Apparently that move's inching closer. Benjamin Miller saying, is it possible he might not be going to Everton, but instead be a replacement for Coutinho or Sanchez? No.
First I've heard of it.
It's not good enough.
Right. No. Okay. 29 shots for Southampton against none from Swansea. Saints, by the way, have now failed to score in their last six matches at home. That's an impressive run. And huge shock as West Brom win 1-0 with a set-piece header from a defender.
Yeah, 6'5" defender, Hagazi. Where did they get him from?
Egypt.
Egypt, 6'5". He looked aggressive.
Right.
He did well.
Ian, a couple of things I've got to mention before we leave the Premier League for now. One is the fact that you said Wayne Rooney was finished. He's not. And he showed that this weekend against Stoke.
To a certain extent, he did. The goal was brilliant. There's no beating around the bush there. The movement, the execution of the header, putting it back across the goalie as he came along his line. It was a fantastic goal. I actually thought the most impressive things he did were the things that he probably wasn't bought for. So Stoke had three corners in the first half. It was Rooney who headed them all away. Mm. He clashed repeatedly with Darren Fletcher. Now, Fletcher probably got the better of him, but he was in there. He was leading by example. It was a really good, sort of industrious performance.
All right.
One thing that Ronald Koeman would get him to do is not run, because that's why he's going to play better. Because with Man United, Mourinho wanted him to run, to press, play at high tempo. Koeman just said to him, just stand still, receive the ball and play. And that's why Everton will suit him.
He was increasingly florid as the second half continued, but it had done the lion's share of the work by then.
Oh, nice one. And Leroy, your son Liam... and Brighton having a little bit of a back to him as a father, their opening game in the Premier League at home to Man City. How did Liam feel that went?
Being the opening game of the season, he said they're most probably the best team they'll play this season.
Right.
And I think he's right. I think they dominated possession. He said to see them in the flesh was incredible. The movement. And he was sat on the bench. And then to be sat on the bench next to Sané, Sterling and Yaya Touré and Mangala on the bench just showed just the strength and depth that they've got. But the one thing that he also said was how solid they were at the back, with the three at the back.
Yeah.
Kompany, Stones and Otamendi. And he said, for the most part, they stayed three at the back. I don't know if you remember Man City. They seemed to just leave one at the back. Stones would be bombing forward, but they had a definite three at the back. And when Stones went forward, occasionally Fernandinho dropped back and they had the three at the back. And he said Kompany just bossed it. So even though they had all that possession and the three centre-halves were sometimes 20 yards inside their half, you're not saying there's no one in their half of the pitch. There's no one inside two-thirds of the pitch, because they condense the game right into Brighton's defensive final third. He said it was incredible to watch. And that's why, for me, I think Pep's, I think he's learned his lesson, and I think he'll be much more solid. And he gave Brighton a lot of respect, and they deserved that. They defended well, but in the end, just caught tiredness, just caught up with them. That's why they gave the ball away and gave away that first goal.
Right.
But Man City were very, very, very good.
Although they did start well last year, to be fair.
Yeah, but in a dynamic way.
Yeah.
They were very, very good in a more restrained way, which is what you think they need to be. If Jesus up front, you know, who wasn't fit last year, is definitely, I mean, he's like an English striker. He's so brave. South Americans, they don't see danger. He puts his head in where it hurts. And that Kompany at the back, again, somebody who's strong, who's brave. It was something that they were missing last season, that steel and that organisation. I think they're a much better prospect for the Premier League title this year.
Super. All right, after this, we're going to look at Europe. Tell you what I feel like. A little bit of French football news. Come back, listeners.
Ooh la la.
This is quite exciting, actually. No, really, listen, wait. Outfield players going into goal doesn't happen enough anymore, does it?
No.
Well, we had two in the same game as Marcelo Bielsa and his Lille took on Strasbourg, and their goalkeeper got sent off with half an hour still to play, and they'd already made three substitutions. So first striker Nicolas Dupreville went in, but he conceded a soft goal. So then they stuck a defender in, and he conceded as well. Or twice, actually.
Are you allowed to do that?
Yeah.
I never knew.
It's like rush goalkeepers.
Yeah. So you, whoever's closest.
It's a very good question. So you just notify the goalie, notify the referee, do you?
Yeah, you can change positions on the goalkeeper, yeah.
Okay. Mm. Did you ever have to go between the sticks?
Yes, I did. I played for, not in a league game, as well as player manager, Gloucester City. I played in goal in the FA Cup.
What tier of the pyramid
was just,
that?
Just below the conference.
Okay.
Yeah, Kingstonian. We won 3-1 and I conceded the penalty. I was outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. But you have to be brave. You have to be like a centre forward to go in goal. Don't put a midfield player in goal, because you have to be a bit braver.
Right.
So always put a centre forward in goal.
Okay. Also in France this weekend, Neymar debuted for Paris Saint-Germain. They were playing Guingamp and they won 3-0.
In style.
Yes. And he scored one, set up Cavani. Cavani set him up for the other. Guingamp contributed a hilarious own goal.
What's a waste of money in French? Because that would be the shout in France. What a waste of money.
For who? For Neymar? For Neymar? I don't think anything like that. Lots of teams are off to great starts, including Monaco, who won their 14th game in a row, which equals the French record. I told you this would be interesting, didn't I? They won 4-1, including a hat-trick for Falcao. Did you see, I think it was the second of them.
Yes.
A magnificent curling effort from Falcao. Go and look at it if you haven't seen it yet.
If only there was a show that would really
round all this up on a Sunday evening.
Yeah.
That's might amazing. Just work.
I only found out about that yesterday.
What was that?
That's not happening anymore. That was the best show on BT.
I couldn't.
They put a parking lot on the piece of land where the EFS used to stand.
I couldn't bear telling my wife, so I just went for 6 hours. Aunt Stratford, all dressed up.
Did you just tell passers-by about stuff in the Bundesliga?
Also in Europe this weekend, you had a couple of Super Cups. You had the first leg of the Spanish Super Cup, in which Barcelona hosted Real Madrid, a 3-1 victory for the Madrileños. And there, and now back at home safely to tell us all about it, is the Gazzetta dello Sport's very own Filippo Maria Ricci. Hello, Filippo.
Hello.
Hi there.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno a lei, capo. So, listen, 3-1 for Real Madrid in Barcelona. That feels huge and significant.
Yes. Let's see what happens tomorrow. On Wednesday, at the Bernabeu. But yesterday was quite impressive. A dull first half, but then a cracking second half with many things. Goals, sending offs, and many other things.
Mm. Well, a goal and a sending off for Cristiano Ronaldo, who came on. Scored a brilliant goal, showed us his abs, and then picked up a second yellow for diving.
Yeah, I think he worked so much, so hard to get those abs that he has to show them to the world. So the first yellow card, I think, is deserved, but also I think he had to do that. Also, he had to he did the same celebration of Messi at the Bernabeu, if you remember. Messi took off his shirt and showed it to the Bernabeu a few months ago. He did the same, Ronaldo. So first yellow card. The second one is there was a contact in the box with Umtiti, and he went down. To me, it's a bit harsh, and the same as thought and as said Zinedine Zidane. But anyway, the problem is that when he got the second yellow card, then he pushed the ref.
Mm. Yeah.
And so now he can get a 4 games ban. The law says from 4 to 12.
Wow.
The ref put it in his notes that he has been he received a little push, he said.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see what will happen, because if it's 4 games, it will be the return, the second leg of the Super Cup, and then 3 games of La Liga.
Mm.
So more drama.
He'll certainly be suspended for the return leg,
obviously,
at the Bernabeu. Good thing they have Asensio.
Yes.
How good is he?
Fantastic. And Isco also is great. Asensio, I think he's the best youngster we have in Spain. And now I think the only problem for Zidane is to fit them all in one team. Because we have the famous BBC with Bale, Benzema, Ronaldo. And then we have Isco that he has to start, and he's starting now all the games. And Asensio is pushing hard to get into the first 11. So there are basically 5 men for 3 places. And Bale, I think, is the one who is less informed now. So let's see what will happen. Well, now the suspension of Ronaldo obviously helps Zidane in a way. But sooner or later, he will have to take decision in big games.
Mm. All right, well, it's a long season, of course, and no doubt there'll be plenty of room in all those different competitions, but it does look like a bit of a conundrum for Zidane in the meantime. The opposite, potentially, over at Barcelona, where Neymar's departure is what we saw against Real Madrid. Is that evidence of a significantly weakened Barcelona this time around?
Yeah, for sure. You know, Neymar, apart from the silly price they paid for him, is obviously one of the two, three best players in the world. And yesterday they tried with Deulofeu, that did quite well at AC Milan, but as you know very well, playing in San Siro now, it's much different than playing a Clásico in the Camp Nou. I saw Deulofeu a bit scared, to be honest. He was kind of shy. He wasn't trying, and he tried and failed what he was trying to do. And let's see. Now, obviously, there are lots of rumors on the market. They will buy someone else, but Neymar is Neymar. And I saw them a bit sad, to be honest. Also, the Camp Nou was very strange. There were many Madridistas because it's full of tourists, so the Camp Nou also had a strange feeling. And the entire team is, I think, is a bit weakened. They don't know what to do. They don't have great replacements. The bench yesterday, they got Denis Suarez, that did quite well, but he's not... you know, and then Sergio Roberto. It's not the same bringing on Asensio and Cristiano Ronaldo.
No, indeed not. Any chance they can get Coutinho in for Wednesday?
I don't know. But on Wednesday, I think it's too soon, but certainly they will make a big effort. But Coutinho is not Neymar. He plays in a different position. So it can help, also because Iniesta is not, in a... the form he was before, but still, I don't know if it's for Wednesday, but they need someone. Busquets, at the end of the game, Busquets is always very calm and thinks of what he says. He said, we desperately need to sign players. So, you know, more clear than that is difficult.
Right. Very interesting. Is your impression, Filippo, beyond Wednesday, is your impression that the Coutinho deal is going to go through?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Right. It's not been... put in the Champions League list for Liverpool game this Wednesday, and he made it clear. I think and Barcelona are desperate. They have to sign someone. So it's Coutinho, Dembélé, possibly the two of them. And but I'm not so sure that it will be enough. Barcelona is in a, you know, and also it's a strange club. When they get into the kind of this depression spiral, then it's difficult to get out. And the club itself, the board is not is divided. You don't know who's really kind of in command. It's not like at Real Madrid where Florentino Perez decides everything. And to be honest, it's different at Barcelona. They made lots of mistakes in the market. Let's see how they can get out of this situation.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Wednesday night, then the return game at the Bernabeu. Filippo, thank you so much for giving us that briefing on this weekend's event.
Thanks to you.
Thank you,
always
Filippo.
Ciao.
Filippo Maria Ricci in Madrid. Well, he mentions there Coutinho and Dembele. Rafa, do you know where Ousmane Dembele is?
Yeah, he's in Dortmund.
Oh, is he? He's come back now?
Yeah, he's there.
Okay.
He's never gone.
All right. Because the club were doing a big thing, but we don't know where he is.
Well, he didn't pick up his phone, but he was in Dortmund. There are reports that he hasn't been talking to anyone since Wednesday from the club. And certainly in Germany, there was a suggestion that today would be the day for Dembele. I will have to see how the day develops.
All right. Bundesliga gets underway next weekend, doesn't it? Is there a key game, a standout match that we really ought to look out for, or nothing particular?
It depends on your tastes.
What are you going to watch?
I'll be in Munich.
Oh, yeah.
To watch Bayern Munich starting their title defence.
Right.
Against Bayer Leverkusen. Should be pretty good fun.
Because they've had an interesting preseason, haven't they?
Shockingly bad preseason.
That's another way of describing it.
And usually you'd say, you know, what does it really matter whether you lose to AC Milan? But to lose 4-0 and to, you know, lose a lot of these prestige games in important marketing zones and didn't reflect well on the team or on Ancelotti, and I think he's under real pressure now. The thing is, I think it's almost impossible to put any pressure on Ancelotti because he just does not care. He knows the worst thing that can happen is he'll be fired, and he's got more time in Vancouver. Now, I'm being serious. I mean, the guy is so cool and so unconcerned that it's very hard for the club sort of to mold him or to push him in the kind of ways that they want to. And what they've done is, a little bit like a corporation, they've added sort of these middle managers sort of underneath him or next to him to kind of keep watching. Willy Sagnol is the new assistant coach. That's something that Bayern actually initiated. And then Hasan Salihamidžić to have a new sporting director. But sporting director kind of suggests he's going to do the big deals and stuff. But he's really more kind of a watchdog sitting on the bench and reporting back to the club what's happening and trying to maybe put a pressure on the players who've had it very easy with Ancelotti. So really not all as well. And their strength is such, and they've bought again really well and for relatively little money, their strength is such that even a dysfunctional Bayern team will have trouble not winning the league, especially with Dortmund perhaps not being quite right either. I think in Europe they might struggle this year.
All right. James Rodriguez was the big signing there in Bavaria. I mentioned that there were a couple of Super Cups, Leroy, and you were curious as to what the other one was, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
It was the Italian Super Cup.
Was it? Oh, right.
Yeah, Juve. Yeah. Down in Rome taking on Lazio. Juve finished off last season getting thumped 4-1 by Real in the Champions League final, and it looked like it was going a similar way this time around. At 85th minute, they were 2-0 down against Lazio. Both goals for Ciro Immobile. And then Dybala whipped in a beautiful free kick and almost immediately converted a penalty. And all of a sudden, it's into the time added on, and it's 2-2. And then, oh my word, Lukaku's brother, Jordan Lukaku, sets up Alessandro Murgia for a Lazio winner right at the death. So anyway, Lazio take the Super Cup, and, you know, it's the Super Cup, so whatever. But it does kind of add fuel to this theory that Juve are not going to be quite the dominant force this time around, particularly with Bonucci gone, of course, to Milan. We'll talk more about the prospects in Serie A this season on Thursday when James Horncastle's in. And we'll also, of course, then be reviewing what happens in the other Champions League playoffs, like Celtic's game with Astana and Napoli against Nice, which could be really interesting. All right, but for today, let's finish off, Ian, with Football League.
Yeah, it's almost like it needs a show of its own, doesn't it? Should we start in League Two?
All right, then.
All right, it's another win for Coventry. They won away at Grimsby. They are, for whatever it's worth at this stage of the season, 2 points clear at the top of the table. Remember, they haven't finished in the top six since the 14th century, so that's great news for them. A last-minute winner for teenager Jack Taylor gave Barnet a win over Luton, who, of course, hit eight last week. Now they're losing to Barnet, and the Bees are fourth.
And Forest Green?
Forest Green lost. They still haven't won, and they lost to Mansfield, whose manager Steve Evans somehow turned it into a dig against Jurgen Klopp.
Oh, how's that?
He said, Jurgen thinks he brought high-pressing football to England, but I've been here 10 years. Which is odd for two reasons, because I don't think Jurgen thinks he brought high-pressing football to England. And Evans has actually been in English football for 23 years. So I'm not sure what he's up to there, but there you go.
All right.
In League One,
okay.
Nothing happened. In the Championship...
Something happened in League One, surely. Yeah. All right. In the Championship.
In the Championship, Mendes Hampton Wanderers won again, 2-0 against Derby. They haven't even conceded a goal yet. Wow. Ruben Neves, I'm probably saying that wrong, impressing again in the middle by all accounts. Aston Villa, who I spoke so warmly of, were absolutely battered by Cardiff, 3-0. Steve Bruce said it was embarrassing. Mm. It really, really was. Some of the goals are horrible.
Right. John Terry?
Caught woefully out of position for the second one. Leonard Slutsky, your friend and mine,
yes.
His Hull side battered Burton 4-1 with a hat-trick for Abel Hernandez. Andreas Boukalakis, who Forrest got from Olympiakos for free somehow, I don't know how they worked that, hit two outstanding goals in a 4-3 win over Brentford.
And Tim Alford wants to know, what's the take on their positive start to the season at Forrest? Is it too early to be excited, or the sign of a genuine promotion push?
It's definitely too early. It's the Championship. Tim. But they're now calling him the Mighty Boosh, apparently.
Well, that's good.
And Ipswich continued what I think has taken everyone by surprise, a perfect start to the season with a win at Barnsley. I can talk about League One if you want. But
I don't mind. They've all gone anyway by now.
This is just the subliminal bit of the pod for those who've fallen asleep, isn't it? Rotherham beat Southend 5-0.
Oh dear, I'm awfully sorry, and it's not been the best of starts for you, is it?
Well, we beat Blackburn last week.
Oh, so you did. You know. So you did. Yeah, I did beg your pardon. All right.
You got someone out of prison, though, didn't you? You got Ethan out of prison.
Yes.
How did you get someone out of prison?
Niall Ranger has just finished doing his time, so he'll be back for Southend.
Okay.
I'm not broadly in favour of this, given what he was inside prison for, but I realise I'm very much in the minority.
Anything you'd like to add, Leroy, before we press stop?
Yes. John Terry still having ice baths at Stamford Bridge. John, just leave it. He's got his 3 days at Aston Villa, and he's been 2 days, and he does his recovery at Stamford Bridge, spotted in the ice bath with the Chelsea players still.
Is he bringing his dog?
I don't know if he's bringing his dog, but John, you got to let it go for a year.
Well, presumably, does he still live down the road at Cobham?
Yeah, he's still down the road, but he's a Villa player. And, you know, he's supposed to be captain, should be
there.
Maybe
they don't have ice baths up there.
Can't afford it. Maybe that's why Chelsea is Champions League. Maybe that's right.
Well, all right, well, that's fascinating, Leroy. And John, if you're listening, Ian, you've said enough, surely.
I
Rafa?
Think so.
No, just Alfreda Zane? We'll be seeing you again soon.
Hope so.
Can
yes.
I add something? Right. Can I go? Because my car parking's running.
All right, yeah. Let's all go then. Listeners, we will be back should you wish to join us on Thursday when, as I say, we will be reviewing what happens midweek in the Champions League playoffs and anything else that might be taking place and previewing another exciting weekend in football. This has been the Totally Football Show. Many thanks to Audio Boom and Maple Street Studios. If you want to get in touch, it's at The Totally Show. And we'll see you soon. Thanks all.